We're going to learn Daf Nun in Masechtas Nedarim. We are going to start from the third line from the top. Third line from the top of Nun Amud Aleph. So, the Gemara beforehand had been discussing different, the commitment that certain Amoraim had for their learning of Torah, and how the Torah had affected them. So that was what the Gemara was talking about before. And specifically, the story before was about Rabbi Yehuda, who lived mamish ba'anias, that he didn't even have a shirt to go out with, that he shared the same garment as his wife in order to be able to go out to daven. So on that note, on the third line from the top, the Gemara starts as follows. Rabbi Akiva iskadesh le barta the Kalba Savua. Now, very interesting, you'll notice in your Gemara, there's in parentheses the Bar Kalba Savua. So this is the Machlekes, actually, whether it was the daughter of Kalba Savua or the daughter of the son of Kalba Savua. In any event, let's go with the Girsa that we have, which is the Bar is in parentheses. So he married the daughter of Kalba Savua. That is the more, kind of, so to speak, accepted version of the story. In any event, he married the daughter of Kalba Savua. Kalba Savua was one of the wealthiest people, one of the wealthiest Jews alive at the time. He married a daughter. However, at the time, Shoma Kalba Savua heard about this. Adra Hana Mikol Nichse. He made a neder that his daughter should be Osir Bahana from any of his property, any of his assets. Because at the time, when Rabbi Akiva married her, he was not anything. As we'll see in a moment, he was just coming off the fact that he was a shepherd, he was a nothing. So Kalba Savua wasn't happy about his daughter's choice. Anyway, this is so far just the Kedushin. Ozla v'insiba le besitov. He went, and then they got married in the winter time. Okay, so they were in the winter, they needed shelter. The Gemara continues, how the Gonu beitivna, they were sleeping in a pile of hay. Havi kamenaket le tivna min mezayim. And Rabbi Akiva, in the morning, I guess, would be pulling out the hay from her hair. In other words, they literally were leaving without even sheets, without anything. They were just sleeping on a pile of hay, which is obviously a very, very low level, a very poor level of way of living. Amar lo, so Rabbi Akiva said to her, "Ihave li, if I had it, Ramina loch, I would give to you Yerushalayim Dedava. I would give you a gold brooch of that had Yerushalayim in it." Apparently this was something that was very common in those days. And although Zecher l'Churban, we don't do this anymore, but they used to engrave in gold or whatever you could do, whatever you could afford, they used to engrave a picture of Yerushalayim on this brooch, and that was something that the woman used to wear. And so that's something that they used to do.
Why don't we do it anymore?
We don't do it anymore because Zecher l'Churban. Zeichel l'churban, this was considered a very fancy thing, but a zeichel l'churban, we don't wear this anymore. So, the Ran says that Rabbi Akiva eventually, as we'll see later in the Gemara, became very wealthy, and when he did become wealthy, the Gemara tells us that he eventually did give her this brooch. But, again, the minhag nowadays, after the churban abayis, we don't do this anymore. In any event, the Gemara says, Amar lei, Amar Law, he said to her, right, if I had Ramina Lochal Yerushalayim Zadava, I would give you a golden engravement of Yerushalayim. Also Elio, but now, the point is, right now, he was living very, very poorly. Also Elio came, Idmi Lohoin Ka'ansha, he made himself appear as if he was a regular person. The Kakari Abava, he knocked on the door. Amar Lahu, he said to them, Havuli Porta de Tivna, can you spare a little bit of hay? The eldest itzoi, because my wife gave birth, v'les li midam laguna, and I don't have anything for her to lie down on, so I don't even have hay. Now he did this in order to make Rabbi Akiva feel better. Amalo Rabbi Akiva, and in fact Rabbi Akiva reacted exactly as he expected. He said to his wife, chozi gavra da filo tivna la yisla. There are other people, you see, that have less than us, that don't even have hay. So they don't even have that, so we have something, we have to be thankful for what we have. Omar La, Amra Lay, so finally, this is the part of the story that we all remember. Rabbi Akiva's wife said to him, Zil Havu Beirav, go spend your time in yeshiva. Ozla, now we all know, as the story is, even though the Gemara doesn't say it over here specifically, but we all know the point is that Rabbi Akiva was an Amoritz. Was an Amoritz when he married her. He didn't know anything. So she told him, you need to go to yeshiva. Ozul Tarte Sri Shnin, he went for 12 years, Kameh de Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Yeshua, to learn by Rabbi Lozer and Rabbi Yeshua. Lemishlam Tarte Sri Shnin, after 12 years, at the end of 12 years, Ka'osul Beisis, he was coming home. Shomamen Achure Beisa, he heard from behind his house, as he was walking towards his house, he didn't get there yet, the Ka'omer Lochad Rosha Ledevisisu. That there was one Russia lady, some bad person that was saying to Rabbi Akiva's wife, Shapir Ovid Loch Avuch, your father was right. Your father did the right thing by you. Choda Deloy Domiloch. Now this is very interesting because you don't see this very often in the Gemara. First of all, he was right for telling you not to marry him because he's not your type. As the Ran says very clearly, because you come from one type of family, a very wealthy family, and he doesn't come from that type of family. You don't, your cultures don't match. Right, so this is, you know, she was giving her good shidduch advice, of course, after the fact, which is a little bit too late. But you should, you know, marry your type. So first of all, your father was right about that. V'oid, and of course, this is the part that's more famous, Shavkach Armalus Chios Kulon Shnin. He left you as an almona, a living almona, all these years, for 12 years. He disappeared, well, during, as I said, during her prime years of her life, her husband disappeared. Amrulay, so she famously answered back to this person, Itzoyis Lidili, if he would have listened to me, Lahave Tarte Sri Shnin Achrenaisa, he would go back to Yeshiva for another 12 years. Now, as we said before, Rabbi Akiva was approaching and heard this conversation. Omar, so Rabbi Akiva now said, Hoil Vyavasli Rishusa, since she gave me permission to do this, Ahadala Achure, I'm going backwards, Hodar Ozol Have Tarte Sri Shnin. And he went back to yeshiva for another 12 years. So we all know famously that Rabbi Akiva went to yeshiva for 24 years. The question everybody asks is if he was right there, right behind the house, he was close enough to hear the conversation, why didn't he at least go in and say hello? So the Musa Sfarim say, because the 12 plus 12 is not the same as 24 straight, that the interruption would have interrupted the whole thing. So therefore he didn't even go in, he went straight back to yeshiva. Anyway, so he was there altogether for 24 years. Also, be'esrin va'arba alfe zuge tamida. Now, this is interesting. As we all know that this Gemara is also repeated in the Gemara in Ksubas. So this is a very similar story it's the same story, but similar version to the Gemara in Ksubas. And over there, in Ksubas, when it talks about Rabbi Akiva's return, it talks about 24,000 talmidim. Over here, in Nedarim, we have the Gersa Zuge Talmidim, which is 24,000 peers of Talmidim, which is obviously double the amount. In any event, the Gersa, some people have the Gersa, some people don't have the Gersa, but that is the Gersa we have in our Gemara. Anyway, so he had 24,000 Talmidim. Nafek Kuli Almalape, so Rabbi Akiva was coming to town. It wasn't very often that somebody as great as Rabbi Akiva would come to this little town, so he was coming. Va'afi Kamas. So too, Rabbi Akiva's wife was about to go and greet him. There is a machlekes rishonim over here also, whether or not she actually knew it was Rabbi Akiva or just knew that it was the big Talmud Chacham. But let's go with the pasuk shat is that she knew that it was Rabbi Akiva that was coming. Amar Allah Hahu Risha. So this famous Rasha, this friend of hers who was giving her bad advice, said to her, once again said to her, Va'at Lahecha, where are you going? Because, as the Ran explains, she didn't have any clothing to wear. She didn't have anything appropriate to wear for a greeting at Talmud Chacham. This is a big simcha. You go out, she mamash had nothing. Amrulay, so she answered, Yoidei a tzaddik nefesh behemosai. A tzaddik knows the soul of his behemoth. So translating literally is a little bit difficult to understand, but the point is that Rabbi Akiva will recognize me. Even though I don't look the right, I don't look what he would expect me to look like, but he'll know it's me, he'll know the suffering, as the Ran said, the tzar that I went through, so it's not going to be a problem. So she came to appear before Rabbi Akiva. So, Kamatchin la Rabbanan, the Rabbanan, I'm sure, some Gaboyim or whatever, this lady is coming to approach him, and they were coming, they were pushing her away. Amar Lahoin, so Rabbi Akiva said to his Gaboyim, Henichula Aliver, Shali Vishalachem Shalohi. This is a very famous line. He said, what's mine and what's yours is really hers. everything that I have. So the Ran has a very funny lashon in the way he says it. He said Bishvila, which translated into English would mean because of her, or for her sake, I did, this is all yours. The natural translation, the way we're more accustomed to hearing this, is because of her, that it's, in other words, that she was the one who encouraged me to go to yeshiva, which is true, and therefore it's her, for lack of a better word, it's her fault that all of this has come to be. So therefore she deserves all the credit. So therefore you should let her come. So, Shoma Kalba Savua, heard that Rabbi Akiva, now he didn't know who Rabbi Akiva was. This is clear. The Kalba Savua did not know who Rabbi Akiva was. He did not know that Rabbi Akiva was his son-in-law. He just knew that Rabbi Akiva was a big Talmid Chacham. So also the Ishal al Nidre, he went to be Shoyal to undo the neder, the Ishtere, and they found, Rabbi Akiva found a heter to be matter. The reason why it was a double lashon, the Mefarshim explained, is because Rabbi Akiva, since he was Negei Bedavar, he was not able to be matter the neder himself. He arranged that he would find three people that would be able to be matter the neder. Now, worth mentioning, because the Ran does mention, although the Ran is on Amud Beis at the end of the Sugya, the Ran does mention, how is it mutter to be shoyel on this neder? Because the pashtus is, of course, this, again, it's interesting that the Gemara here in Adarim doesn't go through this idea of how he was matter the neder, but apparently the Shak Levitaria was, would you have made this neder, what Rabbi Akiva asked by Kabbal Savua was, would you have made this neder if you had known that your son-in-law was a Talmid Chacham? And Kabbal Savua famously answered, I wouldn't have made the neder if he learned even one halacha, even one Mishnah. I would not have made this neder. Now, of course, again, as I said, the Kabbal Savua did not know that Rabbi Akiva was his son-in-law. He didn't put two and two together. He mamish had nothing to do with his daughter, nothing to do with the son-in-law. He didn't know the connection. So Rabbi Akiva then said, okay, I'm the one. You certainly have learned more than one halacha. That's definitely a Pesach that you're able to be matir. But the Ran and other Rishonim all asked the famous question, which is, why was that neder? Again, we're learning the sugya of Nedarim, even though, again, the Gemara here doesn't discuss it, but it's worth asking, because all the Rishonim do ask it in this Masechta. They asked, why was that kind of Pesach mutter? Because we already learned that Noilad is not a heter. Meaning, if something new, how do you undo a neder? Well, the way you undo a neder is, you say,
previous fact.
It has to be. If I had known that this was going to happen, based on the information, I didn't think that this was going to happen. But now that I had known, I would never have made the neder. So, but if it's noilad, if it's something new that came up that I never would have suspected could have happened in the first place, that's not a Pesach, because that's not something that I took into account when I made the neder. So here, the fact that Rabbi Akiva became Rabbi Akiva is certainly a noilad. Nobody expected, and we know the average person, most 99.9% of people don't become Rabbi Akiva. So why was he allowed to use that as a neder? So the Ran answers, because this wasn't really something that wasn't expected. Because even Rabbi Akiva, when he married her, said that he was going to become a sofer. Now, if you want to even translate the word sofer literally, sofer means a scribe. So a scribe in those days, for what purpose? You would be writing over, what were you writing in those days? They weren't writing stories the way we write gibberish. They were writing gittin or mezuzos or tairo or something. They were writing something for the sake of the tzibur. So the chances are, as the Ran says, the chances are when you become a sefer, you're going to end up learning something. Because in order to be able to learn, for example, even if you're going to learn a get, you have to learn some halacha about the get in order to be able to write a get. You're going to have to learn something about a ksuba in order to be able to write a ksuba. So you had to have learned something. So the fact is that because Rabbi Akiva said he was going to become a scribner, that meant that it wasn't really noilad. This wasn't something out of the blue that nobody ever would have heard of. This was something that could have been and should have been expected. And therefore he was able to use it as a Pesach to say, had I known that this was going to be the case, then I would never have made the neder in the first place. So that's why he was able to be mater the neder. So this is the beginning of, so far we know the beginning and how Rabbi Akiva ended up 24 years later. However, the Gemara then tells us a very fascinating thing. Min shis mila i'ater Rabbi Akiva. There were six things that made Rabbi Akiva apparently very wealthy. So here are the six things. Min kalba savua. So the first one is kalba savua. That is that once he was mater neder, the Mefarshim explained that he gave Rabbi Akiva half his wealth. Now you have to understand that kalba savua was very wealthy, was one of the wealthiest from Yidden alive. So whatever that number was, it was a big number. So he gave Rabbi Akiva half his profit, half his value. Min ilo de safinta. He got from there's a word for it in English, I'm not sure what the correct word is, from like the mast, the bow in front of the boat. What they used to do is, as the Gemara itself says, he became wealthy from this extra piece that they used to put in that was shaped like an aisle, which it had like a ram's head at the front of the boat. And it was supposed to be for a good mazel. As the Gemara itself says, the kol sfinta avdin la min eina, or min iza. Every boat used to have this shape at the front of the boat, usually in the shape of an aisle, which is, of course, famously fast. A ram is very fast. So they said that the boat also should be successful, it should be fast and quick. However, Zimna Choda, one time in Shia al Kef Yama, the sailors of that particular boat forgot to attach this ram to the front of their boat. And what they used to do is, besides shaping it in a certain face, in a certain shape, they also used to put money into it, again, as an Ayin Toiv, to show as a mazel, to say that this should bring us riches. So it was loaded with money. Also, who va'ashkechei? So Rabbi Akiva came one time and he found this on the shore, that somebody forgot it there. So Rabbi Akiva went ahead and took it, and there was a lot of money in there. The next thing the Gemara says, so that's so far, if you're counting, that's two. Min guza, and from the, what I'll call the iron box. The box that they used to store their money in when they were traveling on the ships. Why? The Zimna Chada, one time, Yav Arba Zuze Lisfunai, one time Rabbi Akiva gave four zuz to the sailors, Omar Lahu, and he said to them, I see Limidam, go bring me something. You're going on a trip, bring me back something. Loy Ashkechu Ella Guza. The only thing they found was the vault box that they kept on the boat. Al Kef Yoma, they found it on the edge of the ship. Asu Alei, and they brought it to Rabbi Akiva. Amrule, and they said, Ovid Marnole, just wait on this. So the way the Ran explains it is, wait, well, they realized that this box was not really worth the four zuz. The box itself was not really worth four zuz that Rabbi Akiva had invested. So they said, wait, keep this for a while. We'll show you, we'll bring you something else. However, it turned out, it turns out, to have a mili dinre, mole dinre, this box was not just an empty chest. This box was actually full of gold and silver. Why? Dezimna chada, because one time, Tavas Vinasa, a certain boat was drowning, was about to drown. The Kule Iska have Mochis, Bahu Guza. So what they did was to protect, I guess this box was able to float because it was made out of wood or something, so to protect their merchandise and their money, they put all their money and their merchandise into this box. And eventually the boat drowned, but this box survived. It was the black box. It survived and it floated onto the shore. Vishdakach, and that's what they found. Bahuzimna, and they found that at that moment that's what they had found. Now the way the Ran learns Dimindis Rukisa. So the way they learned the Farshim learned Dimindis Rukisa means that it happened to be a ship of Yishma'elim, of traders, that they were famous for doing long haul trades, and therefore there was a lot of money in this box because they needed it for long term trading. So, in other words, the min to Sarikta, even though it says everything else is min this, and is listing the things that Rabbi Akiva became rich with, but the min to Sarikta can't be another thing, because if it's another thing, if it's a separate story that Rabbi Akiva became wealthy, well, then there would be seven things, as we're about to see. There would be seven things that made Rabbi Akiva wealthy. Elamai, it must be that this is just an explanation of why there was so much money in this box, that it wasn't just a box that happened to have a little bit of money, it had a lot of money because it was from the Yishma'elim. Although there are other Rishonim, believe it or not, that learned the Mr. Srikta is another thing, And they, so then it would be seven. So what they do is they take out the min kalba savua. They take out that, they said the kalba savua thing did not really make Rabbi Akiva so wealthy. Okay. In any event, so it was still in the middle of the count. So far we have three. Then the Gemara tells, lastly, in the last two words of the bottom of Nun Amud Aleph, the Gemara says, Umin Matronisa. Min Matronisa from this noble woman. What happened over here? Apparently there was a time when the yeshiva needed money. They needed to borrow money. So Rabbi Akiva went and borrowed a large sum of money from this woman, from this noble woman, and she said to him, okay, fine, who's going to be my co-signer? So he said, either she offered, depending on which Rishonim you learn, either he offered or she offered a fine. He said, I'll have the ocean and HaKadosh Baruch Hu as your co-signers, as your guarantors. And they agreed, and he borrowed the money. Then, when it came time to return the money, for whatever reason, Rabbi Akiva was sick and unhealthy, and was not able to travel. He had the money, but he wasn't able to travel to return the money. But she didn't know that. All she knew was that he didn't return the money. So she went off, she went over to the ocean, and she said, you are my guarantor. She said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I know that if you guarantee something, that you're always going to pay. So, where's my payment? So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu arranged, this is the way the Ran learns it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu arranged that the daughter of the Caesar went a little bit crazy, and she started going into the storage houses of the king, taking out gold and jewelry and who knows what, and she threw it into the ocean for no reason. There's no explanation. She just went crazy and did this. And though that all that money and gold and silver that she threw into the ocean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu arranged that the current would take it directly to the seashore where this woman was standing. And that was enough money to repay her debt. Eventually, Rabbi Akiva became healthy and was able to come return it. So Rabbi Akiva went and came with all the money that he had to pay back this Matronisa. When he got there, this noble woman told him the story of how she was repaid. And so not only did she say, you don't have to pay me because I've been repaid, but she was so impressed by it, she actually gave Rabbi Akiva more money. So this is another way that Rabbi Akiva became wealthy. That was another source of tremendous wealth for Rabbi Akiva. Then the Gemara, now on the top of Nomen Amaveiz, says, Nomen Ishtoi Shel Turnus Rufus, and from the wife of Turnus Rufus. So, okay, the Ran explains what happened over here was that the Caesar, who used to like to challenge Rabbi Akiva in wits, and in Psukim and Bible critics or whatever it was that they were challenging each other, and Rabbi Akiva would always win in the battle of the wits. But there was one Turnus Rufus, one officer over there that did not appreciate the fact that Rabbi Akiva was always winning and felt that it was inappropriate, that he was insulting the king, that he was always outwit the king or the Caesar, in those cases, the emperor. So he was very angry, didn't know what to do. So his wife said, I'll tell you what. His wife came up with this idea. She said, the one thing that always brings the Yidden down is Nus. If you give me permission, it's an interesting way that the Ran tells the story. If you give me permission, I will go and be Mizana with him, and that will be his downfall. And then you'll be able to do whatever you want to him. So he gave her permission. That's what the Ran says. He gave her permission. And she got all dressed up. And she went to Rabbi Akiva to seduce him. When Rabbi Akiva saw her, he ruck, sochak, ubocha. He spit on the ground. He laughed. And he cried. So she asked him, of course, what are you doing? Why'd you do this? So he said, I'll explain two of them, and I'm not going to explain the third. The two of them that he explained was ruck, he spit, because he pointed out to her that everybody comes from a tipa srucha, everybody just comes from this little tiny nothing, and that's where we all start from. So obviously that was his way of rejecting her and saying, listen, we're nothing, I'm not going to get involved over here. He cried because he then said, it's such a pity that such a beautiful thing, and referring to her, it's such a beautiful thing, is eventually going to die and going to be again back to dirt and nothing. So you come from nothing, you end up with nothing. Okay, so but he did not explain to her why he laughed. As it turns out, the Ran says, the reason why he laughed is because he saw, Baruch HaKodesh, he saw that eventually he was going to actually marry her, which is what happened. The Turnus Rufus died, and she was so impressed with Rabbi Akiva that she was Megayer, and she ended up marrying Rabbi Akiva. I guess at that point, the daughter of Kabbal Savur was no longer around. I'm assuming that that's what happened, although it doesn't say that anywhere. And eventually, he did marry this woman. And when he married her, she became the heir to Taras Nufus, to this nobleman, of all his money. So she brought all that money into the marriage, and again, made Rabbi Akiva wealthy. And last, so that's five. And lastly, the Gemara says, Umin Ketiyah Bar Shalom. Ketiyah Bar Shalom. So it's interesting that all the Rishonim here just say, look at the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. And they don't actually explain what the story is. So if you look at the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, what happened was, again, similar story over there, where the nations over there, the Caesar over there was very angry at the Jews and wanted to wipe them away. He wanted to kill them. And came along Ketiyah Bar Shalom and said, Ketiyah Bar Shalom said, you can't kill them. First of all, you can't kill them, because if you do, you'll just be known as an evil nation. Somebody who just goes around killing people for no apparent reason is an evil nation. I mean, as we know, historically, those nations that, attack the Yidden are always the bad guys. Second of all, he said to her, the world can't survive without the Yidden. So even if you want to try to kill them, you won't get it, you won't benefit from it. The world cannot survive without the Yidden. So, as a result, because of Bar Ketiyah, and he was one of the, Congress in the court over there, so they decided not to kill the Yidden. But they said, instead, we're going to kill you, because you're the one, you want to take the blame for them, you're the one. So as they were bringing him out to be killed, so this woman came over to him and says, you're dying for the Jews, you're not even Jewish. So she quickly gave him a bris milah, the Gemara says, in Avodah Zarah. And then they took him, so he was Megayer right there on the spot, and then they took him to the, then they took him to be killed. As they put him in the room where they were going to, I guess, starve him to death, is based on the Gemara, that's what it sounds like. So as they took him to that room, he said, all of my money should go to Rabbi Akiva and all the Chachomim. That's the Lashon that he said. So Rabbi Akiva said, if he said Rabbi Akiva and all the Chachomim, that means we should split it 50-50 like the Kohen Gadol, just like the Kohen Gadol. When he splits the Lechem upon him, he's able to take half, and everybody else, and all the other Kohanim take the other half. So because he's singly, individually pointed out, since she mentioned my name specifically, so I have the right to take my portion. So he took half. So that's another way that Rabbi Akiva became very wealthy. By the way, that Gemara in Avodah Zarah is one of the famous lines where it says, Yesh koina olam haba b'sho achas. So that one moment in his life, that changed the whole world for him, and he was zoicha immediately to olam haba. In any event, so those are the six ways. So the six ways that Rabbi Akiva became rich in 2 seconds here was, one, he found, one, Kabbal Savur gave him money. Two, he was walking on the beach and he found this ram that it was full of money. Third is, he invested to bring something and they ended up giving him this chest full of money. Fourth is, he borrowed money from this noblewoman, and when he went, she got repaid. So when he went to return it, she gave him a lot of money. Fourth is the wife of Taras Nufus that he wasn't seduced by her, so she ended up marrying him and bringing him money. And that's five. And number six is the story of Ketiyah Bar Shalom that protected the Yidden, but when he was about to die, he went ahead and he gave half his money to Rabbi Akiva and the other half to the Chachamim in general. Okay, so that's the way that Rabbi Akiva became very wealthy at the end of his life. Okay, now, similar story, the Gemara says, once we were talking about Rabbi Akiva gave money for investment, so the Gemara now continues on the second line of Noam Beis. The Gemara says, Rav Gamda Yoiv Dalit Zuze L'Sfinoi. He also gave $4 to the sailors. La'asuyah behind Midam, he told them, okay, bring me something from your trip. Like Ashkechu, they didn't find anything good to, any good investments. Aisulei behind Kufa, they brought a monkey. They brought back a monkey with them. Ishtamit, and then when they brought the monkey back, it ran away. Oh, lecharso, it went into this ditch of some sort. Chafru basre, they dug after the monkey, and when they dug to rescue the monkey because they had to return it. Ashkahu derabia amar galusa, they saw that the monkey was lying down on top of a whole pile of gems. So they brought the entire pile of gems to Rav Gamda. Now, the Mefarshim do say that this was Lefnim Meshuras Adin, that they didn't really have to. All they did really, all he was entitled to get the monkey. He wasn't entitled to anything else. However, they felt that if it was the monkey that led them to find this, treasure, so then, he's entitled to the entire treasure. Again, not entitled halachically, it's just lefnim asher sadin, they felt that it was his right. So they gave him the, So a similar type of story. Now, once we're talking about the Caesars, now, but continuing now with the Caesars that we've been talking about, even though the Gemara doesn't actually say it, the Ran brings it, but the Gemara does continue on that line, and it talks about, again, the sacrifice, but this is a continuation of the sacrifice that the Talmid HaChamim gave for the Torah. Amar Labas Kesar the Rabbi Yeshua Bar Hananya. The daughter of the Caesar said to Rabbi Yeshua Bar Hananya, Torah Mufa'eres, it's such a beautiful Torah, but Kli Mechur is in an ugly keli. Apparently, he was not a very good-looking guy. He did not look good. Amar La, so he responded to her as follows. He said to her, Let me teach you something. Lamdi mi beis avich. I'm gonna teach you a lesson from your own father's house. Where do you put your wine for the castle? Amrele, b'mani depachra. We put it in in earthenware, cheap kalim to hold on to the wine. It's cheap, nothing kalim. Amar lo. So he said to her, what? Kuliyama b'pachra. Everybody else, the regular people, keep their wine in these jugs. Atvatoin b'mani depachra. And you also keep your stuff, your wine in jugs. Atoin. You, the castle, the king. Achisun b'mani dekaspa v'dava. You should keep your wine in gold and silver. That's more appropriate for you. Uzla, so she went. Veramas chamra b'mani dekaspa v'dava. So she went and she took all her wine and put it in into these gold and silver kalim. The sari, it's spoiled because gold and silver does not keep wine well at all. In fact, very, very quickly, it spoils very quickly from the metallic for whatever reason, or just that's the way it is. Amar lo, so he said to her, that's the point. Afaraisa kain, the Torah has to be that way also, meaning that the Torah also has to, you see that the wine, the good stuff, has to stay in the cheap barrels, so too the Torah also has to be in the not so fancy stuff. That's what keeps the Torah better. So she asked him, "Va'ikos Shapirim v'Gemirim." There are people, or the Gemara asks, whether she asked or the Gemara asks, but there are people who are now Shapirim over here means good looking. There are people that are, good looking, and they still are able to learn. Amar lo, so he said to her, I guess, so she said this to him, "Ihave sonu have Gemirin tvein." If they hated, now the way the Ran learns, the Ran learns sonu meaning that if they were uglier, having a mirror in tefei, they would learn more because then they wouldn't be so haughty about the way they look, so they'd be able to focus on their learning. However, there are other rishonim that learn havasanu, the Ran learns that if they themselves were uglier, they would have learned more. The other rishonim learned sanu means that if they hated the fact that they were so good looking, that would have been enough for them to learn more. In fact, then there are rayas to this. Fact that Rabbi Yochanan was considered one of the best looking men ever. Rabbi Yochanan was famously known as a good looking guy, and he obviously was Rabbi Yochanan. He was able to learn very well. So it was because he didn't get swayed by his good looks. So the same thing over here also. And Achrami, the person who's busy with his gashmias is not going to be able to concentrate on his ruchnias. Okay, now. The Gemara continues. Hahida also the kamei to Rabbi Yehuda min Nardo Ladina. There was a woman who came to Rabbi Yehuda, who happened to be from Nardo. She came to a din Torah. This chayvus min dina, and at the end of the din Torah, he told her she was chayv. She was the guilty party. Amra le, so she said to him, Shmuel Rabba Chachi Danin. Is this how your Rebbe, right? We all know Rabbi Yehuda Shmuel. So she said, is this how your Rebbe Shmuel would have done? Meaning she was trying to challenge him whether he passed in the correct way. Amar lo, Yadasle, oh, you know him? You know what he would say? Amra le, I do know him. Kutza, he's a midget, he's short. Virabba, Kreise, and he has a big belly. Oiches, he's black. Virabashino, but he has big white teeth. In other words, this is all very derogatory ways of saying that. Basically, she was saying, for some reason, I'm not sure what the relevance is, but she was saying that he eats a lot. He was a short person and ate he ate a lot. That's why he had a big belly. And he was black, but he had big white teeth that, you know, to show off that he was eating. For some reason that was an insult. Amar lo lebzuye kasis. So if you're coming here to just make fun of a Talmud Chacham, tahavi ayitzah b'shamto, he put her into cherim. Poko umesa, she was not able to handle the fact that she was a cherim. She wasn't able to do tshuva, and meaning she didn't want to do tshuva. So poko umesa, so she eventually poko means she exploded and she died. She was not able to handle the fact that she was put into cherim, and she was not willing to do anything about it. So therefore, this was her punishment. Okay, that's the end of the stories of the Gemaras. And again, if this is the same Rabbi Yehuda that we started off with last time about the fact that he was very poor, so again, he did not appreciate the fact that, you know, she was saying that this guy's a big fat guy or a midget fatso. That's what basically she was calling him, and that was like an insult to the commitment and the sacrifice for Torah. So that was not able that you're not able to appreciate. Okay. Umutar Bavesa Termita. So this goes back into our Mishnah, where a person made a neder that he wasn't going to eat from a tavshil. And the way we explained the Gemara earlier was that tavshil means something that you would eat together with bread. So the Mishnah gives this example of Beitza Termita that is going to be mutter and not included in your neder because you wouldn't eat it with bread. Now, what is this? My Beitza Termita, what is this type of egg that's so special? Omar Shmuel said, Avda the Ovid law, if you have a servant who can actually prepare this, Shava Alfa Dinri, it's worth 1,000. Now I'm reading it the way the Ran learns. The Ran learns that the slave that is able to prepare this is worth $1,000, as opposed to other Rishonim, just so that you know, the other Rishonim say that the egg itself, once you make the prepare it this way, would be worth $1,000. Okay, in any ways, so how do you make this egg? Umaya lo alfa zimne b'maya chamima. You put it 1,000 times into hot water, b'alfa zimne b'maya kriya, and 1,000 times into cold water, ad mitzutra, until it becomes so small, k'yech debala yasa, so that you can just swallow it. Which again is the point over here, because once it's bite-sized, you would just eat it right straight out, so you don't need to eat it with bread. You would just eat it straight out. Now, by the way, just so that you know, like, what's the big deal? We could do this. I could take an egg and go 1,000 times. So it's not really 1,000 times. 1,000 times is an exaggeration. And you have to know, so what's the professionalism over here that, you know, you need to be, know exactly what to do. You have to know how hot and how cold, how quickly to transfer it from one to the other. All those things, the science of it was not so simple. It wasn't just simply, you know, it's not like reading the ingredients on the back of a package and then you'll be able to create the same cookies as everybody else. You know, you have to, there's a science to it. Anyway, but not only was it special in the sense that it was able, so what was so special about this? Okay, it's the food, you could eat it. So the Gemara explains, Islay kibos. Now, if a person has an internal wound in their intestines, sorech halah, it will surround that wound, the kadnafka, and when eventually it comes out of your body, it comes out of your system, the asya, and you see it, yoda asya maisama mitboilo, the doctor will know what medicines you need, my mitzi, and how you'll be healed. Meaning, it's able to, what it does is, it takes the, whatever it is, the ulcer, or whatever it is in the intestine, I'm just using that as an example, it captures it, and when it comes out, the doctor is able to look at it and know exactly what the ailment is, so that the doctor is able to cure it. So that's what you know. It's like these little cameras nowadays that they swallow. People swallow it, and the doctors can watch the camera go through your system. So in those days, they had this egg would be able to accomplish that as well. Shmuel have a bodik nafshei b'kulcha. So the Mefarshim say that Shmuel didn't know how to do this egg thing, but he was a doctor, so he had the same idea. He had this cabbage of some sort, these roots, that he also knew that if you put them in your body and they come out, that they won't digest, they'll be able to pick up the medicine. However, the problem was, ad mitzrin inshe beise alon sarein. Now, but the difference is that this kulcha that Shmuel ate was very painful, and Shmuel was in a lot of pain, so the way the Mefarshim learn is that he was in so much pain that it would drive the people of his household crazy until they either pulled out their hair or they undid the braids in their hair. But the point is that they were really troubled by the fact that the pain that Shmuel was in order to be able to test himself. Okay, so again, you see this idea that there's something that's what's so special about the egg. It's able to be a medicinal, it can help a doctor heal you. Okay. Now, once we're continuing with this, the Gemara says, Tanan Hasan, we learned in Masechtas Maisers, we learned over there, So, what this over there, Maisers, is talking about the halacha that when somebody's working in your field, they're able to eat the food that they're working on. However, it has to be that same product. So, apparently, there are different types of figs. There's Lufsin and there's Bnei Sheva, which are so dramatically different, even though they're both figs, but they're so different types that if I'm working in one type, I cannot eat the better type, whatever the better or worse type is. Bnei Sheva, similarly, if I'm working in the Bnei Sheva, I can't eat from the other type of food. Now, my Klufsin, so what is Klufsin? Mina de Ta'enin, it's a type of date, the avdim in hoin lafti, that they make this special dish of lafti. Now, why is this relevant for the next Gemara? Ahu gavra diyov avda lechavre laagmere alpa mini lafti. So, this guy who had a slave that was able to make 1,000 different variations of this food called lafti, this dip of whatever it was. Okay? And he bought, so somebody bought it. It was like very interesting. I want him to show me how to do this. Avda lechavre, sorry. Agmere Tamnimea. And he ended up teaching the slave Amdata, teaching him 800 versions of how to prepare this food. So Asmer Ledina Lakame de Rebbe. So he brought him to a dentaira in front of Rebbe, saying, you told me that he can teach me 1,000 versions and he only taught me 800. So you're missing 200 versions. Omar Rebbe, so Rebbe said, Avasenu Amru, our forefathers saying, Nashenu Toivo, we forgot what good was after the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. Anu afilu beinenu loyreinu. We never even saw this good thing. Meaning, what he was saying was like this: don't be ridiculous. There's good. You're right. There might be something out there that you can't even imagine how good it was. We don't even remember what good is. And you're complaining about the fact that you only learned 800 different ways to prepare this dish. You got more than you bargained for. You're right. It's not 1,000. But it's more than you need. Who needs this type of gashmias? So he wasn't. Rebbe was not impressed, and did not rule in his favor to give him the difference. Okay, so now we're going to start with stories of Rebbe. We're going to get towards the end of the daf now, but we're going to stop, so to speak, in the middle of the stories with Rebbe. But we'll do a little bit further to get closer to the end of the Yomid. Rebbe Ovid Lehilulo L'Reb Shimon B'Ribi. Rebbe made a chasana for his son, Reb Shimon. Kosev al Beis Kanana, he wrote, either literally, physically wrote, the words, Esrin Va'arba Alfin Revua Dinre, Nafak al Beis Kanana Dain, that he spent 24,000 thousands of gold, in other words, 2.4 million or whatever it was, gold dinarim on this chasana. They either wrote that, either on the chasana itself, or preparing the house for the chassan and kala. There are those that learn that he didn't actually spend $24 million on the chassana itself. In any event, he spent on his son, let's just say, 24 million gold coins, which is a lot of money. What? It's an exaggeration. Yes, it's an exaggeration, but the point is he spent a lot of money. Whatever the actual number is. V'loy asmane l'bar kafra. And he didn't invite Bar Kafra. Now, as you'll see again, we're not going to learn this Gemara today, but you'll see that Bar Kafra was somebody that Rebbe did have a very direct relationship with. And we'll see in the Gemara later, I'll just throw this in now, because later Rebbe's going to tell Bar Kafra not to make him laugh. Bar Kafra was, besides being a Talmid Chacham, was also a Batchen. Was also able to make Rebbe laugh, and we'll see that that's not what Rebbe didn't want that to happen. So he did not invite Bar Kafra to the chasana. Omar le im la'avrei ritzoyne kach, lo'isa ritzoyne lachas kama v'kama. If somebody who doesn't do what he's supposed to do, meaning Reb Shimon, Bar Kappa was very insulted that he wasn't invited to the wedding, and he felt that a Talmid Chacham should be invited to the wedding, and he was saying, so I guess Rebbe is not doing what he's supposed to do. Again, I'm translating it literally over here, or paraphrasing what the Gemara is saying. If this is how HaKadosh Baruch Hu treats somebody who doesn't do what he wants, meaning he gave him $24 million, certainly somebody who does what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants certainly deserves more. So this was an insult, basically telling us that Rebbe did not do what he was supposed to do. Okay, but Azmanei, so I guess Rebbe changed his mind and eventually did invite Bar Kafra. Omar, now Bar Kafra changed his tune also, and he said, if this is how HaKadosh Baruch Hu pays a Talmid Chacham, somebody does what he's supposed to do in this world, this is how much he gives him. Could you imagine how much more so he would give somebody in Olam Haba? So Rabbi Shimon changed his tune over here. So there are a lot of mafarshim talk about what happened over here, why Bar Kafra was so insulted in the beginning, why he insulted Rebbe, and then why he changed it. But I saw one pshat among the many pshatim in this Gemara, but one pshat that I thought was really actually a little helpful was the fact that Reb Shimon was not really changing his attitude. It wasn't that he was insulting Rebbe in the beginning, and then all of a sudden, now that he got invited, he wasn't insulting Rebbe. Bar Kafra would never have the chutzpah to do that. Rather, he was saying the same thing all along. He was actually saying, the problem was that when he said it the first time, the first version that he said was misunderstood, was misinterpreted what he meant. And then afterwards, he clarified what he meant. But what he really meant all along was like this. There are, as we know, there are good people and bad people, and sometimes there are good people who do well, and then sometimes also bad people who are very successful. Okay, as the Gemara itself talks about it in Brachas and other places and many places in Shas, there are bad people who are successful. There's no question. So, what he was saying is like this, that even though there are bad people who do well, so what he meant to say is like this, that's in this world. In this world, there are people that do well. Some of them are good people, and some of them are bad people. But when it comes to Olam Haba, only the good people are going to do well. The bad people are not going to do well. So this is what Reb Shimon was actually saying all along, but was misinterpreted. So when he says, if somebody doesn't do his will, somebody who does his will, Alachas Kama V'Kama, is saying like this, meaning there are bad people that get good. I get it. And there are good people who get good also. What Reb Shimon meant was, yes, that's this world. In this world, you don't have to be a good person necessarily to be successful, to get all the good that you're entitled to. But then when he finally clarified his point, what he was saying is, that's, if this is what the good people get in this world, where they share the good with the bad people, in Olam Haba, Alachas Kama V'Kama, this is what the good people are going to get, but they're not going to have to share it with the bad people. That's what Reb Shimon was changing. Again, I said there's many explanations to this Gemara, but this explanation resonates with me, that Bar Kafra was not insulting Rebbe in the beginning. It was misunderstood, and it sounded like an insult. There's no question about that. And that's what happens when a person might be insulted. He might end up saying things in a way that could be interpreted because of the circumstances that could be interpreted negatively. But Bar Kafra never actually meant to directly go insult Rebbe right on the spot. He meant all along that he was just saying that Alachas Kama V'Kama, when you have somebody like Rebbe in Olam Haba, it's going to be uncomparable to, you know, it's going to be all good, and the Rishonim are not going to be entitled. Okay, we'll stop over here. We'll pick up from this Gemara next time, Rishonim.